Well, I'm looking for an apology from both of you two. I mean, Dave Harrigan with the cheap shot at Kirk in the open. And then really, let's be honest, if there's one person who drove Kirk Cousins out of town more than anyone, it's Matthew Caller. And the two of you, I'm expecting a lengthy email to Kirk Cousins. Maybe you want to tweet at him. Maybe you want to go to Kohl's. All I know is Kirk Cousins last night, 42 of 58, 509 yards, 4 TDs. Harrigan, before we get to Caller, it's your little cheap shot in one of your cute opens. 509 yards, wasn't really throwing short of the sticks last night, was he,
I actually
Dave?
Did note him throwing short of the sticks at least a handful of times on third downs.
Hmm. Oh, so you're critical of 4 TDs and 509 yards? Is that what you're saying?
I'm saying if I threw 58 times, I could at least get about 250.
Okay, so that's not an apology. Caller, I'm told you helped pack the bags. And as he crossed, he drove back to Michigan. I was told your final words were good riddance. What do you want to say? You know?
Well, you know what? Last night, as I was watching that game, I felt myself twitching, and I
believe
smelled
it.
Something weird in the air. Why does this feel so familiar?
Whoa.
Why does it feel so familiar that there was a game that Kirk should have lost, and even threw an interception that should have lost in the game, and their win probability was about 5%, and then somehow, from the depths of their season, maybe being on the brink, Kirk Cousins finds a way to keep it alive, to move his team one game above 500. It all felt so familiar to see that. I will say that I was legitimately concerned about his health when he started the season.
Yeah.
And
I would want to see.
Yeah, I mean, honestly, he was not moving well. I wouldn't want to see that. And so he's picked it up significantly. He looks so much healthier than he did before. And so somehow in a 500-yard game, still had a lot of Kirkian moments.
Yes, he did.
In that game that drove me crazy. And, you know, I just, it's a reminder of also that, you know, they don't have a very good defense and maybe their offensive line isn't the best.
Mm-hmm.
You go, I wonder how many millions it would have cost to fix those things. Oh, wait, they don't have them because they signed Kirk. But I did get a text.
I mean, 509 yards and taking a shot at his salary. How about if it was 600 yards? Matthew, would that have been enough? 700?
Then Norm Van Brocklin would have been upset if he had gone for 600.
That's true.
I did get a text from somebody, a former Viking, who texted me last night. Can you imagine if the Vikings weren't 4-0 and they were watching Kirk go for this? But I will say, I think everyone should be happy. It always made sense to me for the Falcons to do this. They needed a quarterback. They needed this type of player because they had a roster that was largely built and ready to win, and the Vikings needed to do their reset and spend all the money on the roster. Everyone should be pleased.
Yeah, I'm trying to look it up right now. Vikings, Falcons. When is that ball game here? And it's here. So Kirk comes here. Hold on. I've got it. I could prep before or just during the interview. Some do it before. That seems a little more thorough.
December 8th.
Kirk Cousins. When Kirk comes out, and let's say the Falcons are still faring well. Well, first of all, the Vikings...
we'll probably have it sewed up by then.
The Vikings may just announce their own offense, so Kirk doesn't get introduced. Will we get a tribute video? NFL, they don't really do the tribute videos, do they, Matthew? Which I don't mind because it's like in the NBA and NHL now. If a guy plays 10 games, I swear to God, he gets like a 90-second tribute video. You know, knock it off.
And returning to Target Center, Luke Ridnour.
Yes.
Yeah, all right, here we go. Yeah, they don't really do that in football. It's too intense, I guess. I did think that maybe they would show the Minneapolis Miracle and show Diggs on the sideline when they played the Texans. They did not do that. But I imagine when he comes out that he'll probably get some sort of polite cheer the same way that Packers fans cheered Aaron Jones last week. I don't think that there's any animosity between either side, really. I think everybody knew it was done. Minnesota fans wanted Kirk to win here. He gave a lot of exciting moments, couldn't quite get over the top. And we all kind of said, well, this was the right time to break up and move on. And he has improved greatly over the last couple weeks there. They look like a what? 9-8 team? Was that right? The Falcons? Maybe a
division helps them, right?
Oh, yeah, for sure. It definitely does. But, you know, they look like the same type of team that Kirk led here over and over. And the Vikings are this kind of mystery to us because they have been so good, but we keep asking how long it's going to sustain. So by December 8th, we'll have the answer for both of those questions. But I think as far as like reassessing, was it the right thing? It was definitely the right thing for both sides, and I think everybody's happy with the way that it worked out.
This is the man who runs Purple Insider. He's great with us, joins us every Friday. Matthew Collar's with us. Okay, so let's go back to Green Bay in this way. Game's over. Naylor makes a poor decision. Green Bay gets some momentum. They carry things significantly in the second half. The Vikings hang on and win the game. We've watched this in sports forever. Happens on a regular basis in the NBA team, builds up a big lead. All of a sudden, the other team starts getting momentum, especially when you're at home. And so it's not surprising. So I get the momentum part. But as you look back at that game and talk to people, did the Packers in the second half schematically discover certain parts of the Flores defense that other teams can try to take advantage of throughout the remaining parts of the season? And there's still, obviously, 13 games to go.
Well, I mean, sort of yes and no, because in a way, if the biggest weakness of the Flores defense is don't you dare get up 28-7 or you'll pick them apart. Well, that's, you know, that doesn't make any sense.
Right.
But I think we did learn that when it comes to the clutch moments of games, who opponents think is the right person to attack. And it didn't really help the Packers. It did at times, but that person is Byron Murphy Jr. They do not want to throw it to Stephon Gilmore. They are treating him like he is Darrell Revis in his prime. He is hardly getting targeted all season long. And
is that surprising you?
A little bit, but you know, I think also they've got him playing a lot of zone, and this dude is absolutely brilliant when it comes to playing zone. And he can still play man as they did last year a lot, but it's more of a zone system, which means he's going to be reading route combinations. He's going to be in the right spots all the time. And I think he's just not making it easy on anybody. But reputation is part of it. The other part is if you make a mistake toward him, it will be an interception most of the time because he's a former defensive MVP. So I think he's getting a little bit of the respect factor there, but also he's their best corner. And most teams, when they plan to go after the weak link. And that clearly is Murphy Jr., except for when he picks it off or when he causes a fumble. So if your weak link can actually handle his own, you're in pretty good shape. I also think that they just got gassed. It was not a cold day there. It was you know, the sun was beating down all day, and they were out there the entire second half. And the offense had some three and outs. They stopped the clock on themselves with incompletions where they probably should have just run the football. I think the only thing I came out of it was really on the offensive side that Kevin O'Connell will just never be able to help himself when it comes to
passing
no matter
the
what the score. He wants the quarterback to throw touchdowns no matter the score. You can't just on second and one hand it off and have Will Reichard kick a field goal and go up 31-7. You must try to throw a fade to your 5'9" running back in the end zone. But the other thing was, too, the second half, I think the reason the defense got beat was because Darnold was not sharp for really the first time. He had some plays where the timing was off, and you could really see that on the film where it just the throw should have been there and he didn't get it off in time. But the fact that he recovered and led the biggest drive to close out the game, I thought was a really good sign for his confidence. So I think there were a couple cracks on both sides, but I mean, overall, when you're up by that much and you're trying to close it out, as you said, no one is going to be able to hold off a good team like Green Bay for the entire day when you get up like that.
Collar's going to come right back with us. We'll talk Aaron Rodgers. We'll talk the NFL in London and many more items. Right now, during this break, just go check out Purple Insider mailbag today. Comparisons between this year and other great seasons for the Vikings. Podcasts. So much to consume. PurpleInsider.com. Check it out. Back with Matthew in moments.
You sit in traffic now, but later, there's an ice-cold reward. Modelo, the mark of a fighter. You've earned this rich golden lager with a crisp, refreshing taste. Because you know, all your patience is paid out in gold. You remain calm through honks, bumper to bumper, and people yelling.
Come on, move!
You are a fighter, and Modelo is your reward. Modelo, the mark of a fighter. Drink responsibly. Beer imported by Crown Imports, Chicago, Illinois.
A quick correction here. I've just got it locked in right away, so it's purpleinsider.football. Best way to track it now. Purpleinsider.football for Mr. Purple Insider. Matthew Collar. Aaron Rodgers, how much football does he have left in him? Can we tell? Because obviously last week in their loss, he was not very good. The team was not very good. The offensive line was not very good. Have there been sustained stretches where Rodgers, maybe not his peak Rodgers, but still looks like an upper echelon NFL quarterback?
So, by the way, I bought purpleinsider.football and purpleinsider.com because I just liked the dot football. So
it's I like
not,
it. Okay. Like either way
go,
works.
You could go either way. You're going to find the work either way. As far as Aaron Rodgers goes, I would say there has been flashes of the Aaron Rodgers that we once knew that demolished the Vikings and had those great battles with Mike Zimmer. It is not the same Aaron Rodgers. And part of that is that it's not the same Green Bay Packers. He has tried to bring everybody with him that he could, but the band is just not the same with a new drummer and keyboard player that don't know what he's doing, which I think has happened a couple of times with that team, especially last week where they couldn't seem to get the cadence right. And Garrett Wilson, who is a phenomenal talent, was looking back at him at the end of the game. Dude, what are you doing? What check did you make? What change did you make at the line of scrimmage? He had trained those wide receivers to know exactly every whim that he wanted at the line of scrimmage. And I don't think the Jets players know exactly what he's talking about. And that's why you see Alan Lazard, once again, the guy from Green Bay. And he's of course, you know, trying to trade for Davante Adams. Like, why don't you just bring over, you know, David Bakhtiari to get him to do the snap right? He had his own little system that he invented there with Nate Hackett. And I don't think it's one that you can really teach guys now. So there's clearly some issues there. His mobility's not great. He's getting rid of the ball as quickly as he ever has in his entire career. And I had a stat in the Friday mailbag, I think, or on the podcast somewhere. I had a stat that when he throws under 2.5 seconds, he's really effective. But when he holds on to the ball, he's been very ineffective so far this year, which makes me wonder, is Brian Flores going to try to not blitz Aaron Rodgers like crazy and see if he could sit in the pocket and pick them apart with maybe some anxiousness about the Achilles and not being on the same page with his wide receivers, make him really think through the coverages? I will be fascinated to see how this battle ends up playing out.
You have a column and story today, and it's mainly looking at great Viking seasons. Once we get past the defensive-led Fran Tarkenton, Purple People Eaters, and talking about how many of these seasons, which turned out to be great regular season teams, some level of success in the playoffs, just came out of nowhere. You know, wasn't a situation where, hey, they just won the Central, they just won the North. You knew they were about to be great. Even the 87 season, when because of the strike, when they were talented, because the record wasn't that good, and then they have the dominating wins over the Saints and also the 49ers. What continuity did you see on those seasons outside of just the unexpected nature of them?
Yeah, it is remarkable how there's almost no time where we ever went into a Viking season that we knew it was going to be really good. And the ones that we thought were going to be really good were almost always disappointing. When, you know, you talk about like 2010 or 2018. But I think that the similarity is that through four games, we didn't really know. And it wasn't all that predictive. I mean, in 2017, they are 2-2 through 4 weeks. And Case Keenum is starting. And we think, okay, maybe they can Jim McMahon this thing in the way to a playoff game. And instead, they're sitting there at 13-3 with a a home playoff game against the Saints and a first-round bye. But there were other years, as everyone well knows, including Josh McCown throwing the touchdown at the end, making Paul Allen lose his mind. And then, 2016, which was my first year on the beat covering them, they were 5-0, and they had three straight blowout wins going into the bye week. They came out of the bye week and had Mike Zimmer's eye pop out, North Turner quit, and all hell break loose with that team. Now, I think that the stability of Kevin O'Connell is going to help them, the stability of the veteran players that they have. But I think part of it is there have been four-game win streaks, and sometimes it results in 1998, and they outscore their opponents by 200-and-something points, and sometimes it ends up being disappointing. So I think we are raising the bar when you go to 4-0, but I don't think until we get a few more weeks in that we're really going to be sure that it's one of those years.
Matthew Collar is with us. Okay, let's finish with this. This is a game in London. This has been going on for years and years, right? You have Jacksonville going over there multiple times a year. Where do you, as a diehard football guy, where do you stand on international play, and where does it go next with the NFL? We're kind of used to this rotation. It was different this year when you had, a game right from the get-go in Brazil on a Friday night involving the Packers and Eagles. So what is the next progression for the league outside of just the standard home and road games in your home stadiums right here in the States?
Yeah, it's really hard to see a franchise ending up there, and I think the Vikings are proof of that, where their trainer was talking about, or their equipment guy, Mike Parsons, was talking about having to move 20,000 pounds of equipment overseas. That just seems like if you were asking people to do that all the time. Yeah, that is a lot to ask. And I think that from the perspective of fair play, I never feel like these London games are actually real football in the same way that we see on a weekly basis, because the teams are just so mind bleeped by the travel and everything else. I mean, it's just, the games are never good. They're never normal. Even last 2022 against the Saints was such a bizarre and ugly game. That's usually how it goes. So from that perspective, I get a little bit like, okay, even this one, are they going to beat a team they should beat? They would have beat the Jets at US Bank Stadium, and I don't know what's going to happen here. But from the perspective, it kind of reminds me of the Swifties last year getting into football. Hey, more people liking football is good for everybody, right? Everybody should learn to get their chance to see Justin Jefferson and everything else. I don't mind it. There's just no real good answer to the logistics, and there's no good answer unless we all get on the same time and change the way the sun moves around the earth, or the other way around.
That'd be dramatic.
I think it is the other way around.
Yeah.
I don't think that this is ever going to be something that's easy to do or can be done like all season long.
Okay, have we confirmed? Are you in for a double shot on Monday?
Of what?
Are we just asking him on air right now?
I was going to talk to him afterwards and see if he wants to join us on Monday, because Chip's too good to join.
Yeah.
Oh, I see, because Chip is – I was going to say, what are we talking? Double shot of Taco Bell sauce or something? If you want to talk football, I'm down.
We might work in – we'll have a Lynx update for sure with a couple games.
Big night.
So let's plan on Monday, 2:05, if that works out with your schedule.
Okay, I'll see what I can do. I'll work around. I got a lot of interviews, requests.
Yeah. You're in high, high demand. I know that. Thank you, caller. I appreciate it.
Thanks, Chad.
PurpleInsider.com, PurpleInsider.football. He's running football. I mean, Roger Goodell, get out of here.
Well, he is football.
That's it. Am I wrong? Coming up next.